Today is July 15th, 2007, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, morning editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup.
The iPhone continues to dominate the world of Apple news, and this week we have angry Germans, interesting predictions from analysts, praise from the enemy, otherwise known as the corporate IT world, and the inevitable rumor of things to come.
Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster made what many might consider an obvious prediction this week, saying that OS X will be coming to an iPod near you. Mr. Munster's thought is that the next generation of iPods will abandon the system-on-a-chip from Portal Player that Apple has used since the first iPod in favor of driving the devices with OS X, just like the iPhone.
Mr. Munster specifically said, "We believe the iPhone reveals much of what the iPhone will soon be. Specifically, we expect Apple to release high-capacity iPods based on OS X sometime during or before Macworld 08 in January. These iPhones will likely have touchscreen media features similar to the iPhone, but will not have the wireless phone or internet features."
Not to be outdone, JP Morgan analyst Kevin Wang said that Apple will be introducing a smaller version of the iPhone. He dubbed the iPhone Nano. In a research note, Mr. Wang cited unnamed manufacturing sources in Taiwan, but also reasoned that, quote, "We believe the iPod Nano will be converted into an iPhone because it's probably the only way for Apple to launch a lower-end phone without severely cannibalizing iPod Nano," unquote.
Mr. Wang expects the smaller iPhone to be priced at $299, that's U.S. dollars, and said that Apple could sell a staggering 30 to 40 million of the devices in calendar year 2008. Apple has said it hopes to sell 10 million of the current iPhones during calendar 2008. Now, please note that unnamed manufacturing sources from Taiwan have a very mixed track record, even when cited by analysts.
Accordingly, we extend our mantra about Mac rumors to the iPhone market and say, an iPhone in your hand is worth two on a rumor site.
In other iPhone-related news, Apple received some praise from an unexpected source, the world of corporate IT, specifically relating to NetSuite, a suite of corporate-oriented customer relationship management, or CRM, tools that operate over the web. Apple has been working diligently with the company to make Safari more compatible with NetSuite, and the effort has paid off, at least according to some business folks quoted by Information Week.
Mort O'Sullivan, president of privately held Architect Systems in Mabin, North Carolina, told the publication, quote, "It wasn't intended as a business device, but it seems to work better than other phones in using NetSuite." He added, and I quote here, "It's like years better." Brad Kugler, chief executive of Distribution Video and Audio in Tampa, Florida, agreed, saying, quote, "I expected to have an iPhone for fun. I'm sort of an Apple fanatic, but it works beautifully for NetSuite."
Also this week, Piper Jaffray analyst Gene Munster said in a research note that Apple is largely protected from volatility in the NAND memory markets by the nature of its contract with NAND manufacturers. Mr. Jaffray said that, quote, "Apple has likely locked into contract pricing on NAND flash with Samsung for the next several quarters and, therefore, would be insulated from the recent changes," end quote. Now, this will have the added benefit of ensuring that Apple gets what it needs before other device manufacturers, which could be key if iPhone demand continues apace.
In final iPhone news, it appears the Germans are getting antsy to cross the Maginot Line into iPhone territory. Third-party Apple German retailer Gravis reported this week that it was receiving 1,000 inquiries every day about the iPhone. All told, some 57,000 Germans interested in the iPhone have registered with the company, and 58% of them said that they would consider switching carriers if needed. Note that a German carrier has not officially been announced. The rumors have swirled around T-Mobile being the lucky winner.
In Mac news, Apple's new MacBook Pro received some high praise from photography pro Rob Galbraith. Mr. Galbraith put the latest MacBook Pro's LED backlit display through its paces for professional photography use, and he went so far as to call it the best laptop display available. He praised the display's color calibration, accuracy, its wide color gamut, and its ability to avoid oversaturation problems. On the downside, he found that it has a tight viewing angle. While Macs have long been favored by creative pros, including the world of digital photographers, Mr. Galbraith's review should help further boost Apple's popularity in this niche, but important, creative professional group.
Michael Sweet, the creator and developer of CUPS, or the Common Unix Printing System, revealed this week that Apple had purchased the source code for CUPS in February of 2007 and made Mr. Sweet an employee. That means that Apple owns the open source printing solution used in Mac OS X, which is released under the GPL2/LGPL2 open source license. According to Mr. Sweet, CUPS will continue to be released under those licenses, meaning that nothing should change for the Unix world other than having a multi-billion-dollar corporation funding further development of the technology.
After such a heady 2 or 3 weeks of ebullient Apple-related news, you might now be asking yourself, what kind of impact has this had on Apple stock? Well, the answer to that question might be best expressed in the form of onomatopoeia.
Cha-ching! Apple ended the week at a record high of 137.73, up 2.73% on the day for Friday, and up 4.12% for the week. No word yet from Cupertino on a long-rumored stock split.
And on that note, I think it's time to jump into the context machine.
Cozy.
So I'd like to start with our opinions and views on exactly what's going on in Apple's stores now that the iPhone is out. And just to get the ball rolling, Vern Seward, one of our columnists, he wrote a column about how the Apple store near him seems to have a lot more traffic now than it did before the iPhone launch.
Well, you know, I personally have always been surprised isn't quite the word, but impressed maybe a better word, at just how much traffic there normally is in an Apple store anyway. I mean, you know, it's usually one of the busiest stores in whatever mall I happen to visit that store in, and that's something to be said. But I too have noticed an increase in traffic since the iPhone's released that really hasn't diminished all that much.
Now, there's two Apple stores relatively near me, the Flatiron Crossing and then the 29th Street store up in Boulder, Colorado. And I've been in both stores since the iPhone launch. And I, too, have noticed that it appears there's a lot more traffic in the stores now. And I am seeing iPhones leaving the store, but leaving the store legally, on a regular basis. It seems like there's still a lot of people buying the iPhone.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And I'm sure that we're going to see some of the analysts commenting on this. Gene Munster is one of those analysts that often keeps an eye on traffic in the Apple stores. And I imagine that we're going to see something one way or another. Now, what we're talking is very anecdotal. It's not scientific. Apple hasn't announced any traffic numbers. But anecdotally speaking, what we're seeing across the country appears to be an increase in traffic since the iPhone's release that is not really going away.
You know, actually, that's a good point. We are talking across the country here because Vern is in Florida, you're in California, and I'm in Colorado. So all across the country, we're seeing a difference in store traffic.
Indeed. And, you know, when you see those people in the stores, if you walk by one of your local Apple stores, you're probably not going to see everybody clustered around the iPhone either. You're going to see some people clustered around the iPhone. But then you're going to see people, you know, all over the rest of the store looking at other products, too. And I think that's very, very good for the Mac platform. It's very, very good for Apple's bottom line.
You know, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because when I was in the two Apple stores that are relatively close to me, I did see more than just iPhones leaving the store. There were people buying iPods, but most notably, I was seeing MacBooks leave the store too.
Yeah, that's good. You know, every little bit of growth in the Mac platform makes our options as Mac users more open. It's, you know, going to continue to bring more attention from more developers. For instance, EA recently came back to the Mac after a long absence. So, you know, all these things are just really, really good for the Mac community as a whole.
Yeah, and I think that's going to translate into an even better bottom line for Apple, at least hopefully it will. I mean, the company is already seen as the most successful per square foot retail space in the United States. So if they're going to improve thanks to the iPhone, that's got to add up to some serious money by the end of their fiscal year.
You know, and that's an important issue, Jeff, because, you know, we haven't seen as much of this in recent years, but there used to be some angst, and there is still at least a modicum of angst about whether or not the iPod or, you know, maybe even the iPhone is going to supplant the Mac, you know, within Apple, whether or not Apple might be abandoning the Mac platform, et cetera. Now, in my opinion, none of that's going to happen. But more specifically, especially if iPod video and iPhone are running on OS X and Apple is making a ton of money from those products, that money is going to be going back into OS X development. And now OS X is different from Mac OS X, but the two are still connected. So the iPhone making money is good for the Mac platform. It's good for the operating system that we know and love.
You know, there a lot of the analysts or pundits out there that are afraid that Apple's going to abandon the Mac platform. In my opinion, they have missed the point. And what I see happening is this major change for Apple, which is not Macintosh as a platform, iPod as a platform, and whatever else they decide to make. They are a one-platform company now, and that's OS X. And they have multiple devices that run on their platform.
I don't know if I'd go that far. I mean, there still is a music division and a computer division. And I think that Apple is definitely looking at these two divisions separately. But the point about parts of those different divisions sharing this core technology are certainly valid. But I definitely wouldn't call Apple a one platform company right now.
Well, I'll continue to call them a one platform company, but just to clarify it, I'm talking about the foundation that all of their other platforms build out from. So, yes, I still see them having a music division, a computer division.
I mean, because they'll build from the same base. I don't want to try to beat a dead horse here, but I think that the two platforms the company have are iTunes and Mac OS X / OS X.
Okay, I can see that, and that's totally valid too. So, and in lieu of beating the dead horse even more, how about if we talk about what Apple's doing in the component market for memory?
Oh, that's very exciting. Actually, it's not very exciting, but it is very important. The NAND situation that Gene Munster talked about is actually pretty important. The NAND memory market is commonly referred to as a commodity market, meaning that, you know, supply and demand greatly affect price. In some cases, you know, it can actually affect how much product you can get out the door. And what Mr. Munster has basically said is that Apple is effectively locked up its supply of this product and locked it up in such a way that pricing is going to be stable for the company. That's absolutely huge when it comes to Apple being able to execute both iPod deliveries and now this brand new world that they're in of iPhone deliveries, where, you know, the potential market is even larger than the iPod market. And Apple being a new player in that, you know, they can't afford to have something like a manufacturing hang up, like not being able to get enough NAND memory, be the cause for them failing in the market.
Now, it's important for everyone to remember, right now, Apple's using their NAND memory primarily in three products. You have the iPhone, the iPod Nano, and the iPod Shuffle, all apparently very successful products. So yes, it's very important that Apple maintain the supply of components so that they can produce the product and sell them to all of us eager consumers. So there was a time, though, when Apple couldn't have done that, I think, and that would be back in the days when the pundits would always attach beleaguered to the front of Apple's name. And times have changed, because now Apple seems to be the powerhouse in this market, and they're setting the terms and they're getting the deals so that they can buy all this stuff ahead of time. And their competitors don't seem to be able to do this nearly as well.
Yeah, Apple is the 900-pound or maybe the 5,900-pound gorilla in this market. And, you know, Apple is the company that the NAND manufacturers need to keep happy. They're the ones who are buying. I don't, you know, actually, I don't know. I don't want to get myself into the kind of trouble that we're going to address in the mea culpa section of the context machine. But as I understand it, Apple is definitely one of the biggest, if not the biggest, buyers of NAND memory at this point. And you know, just because of the size of the iPhone market. So, you know, the folks want to make sure that Apple's happy and they're giving them the terms that they want. And that's always been something that Steve Jobs and his team of executives have always been very good at getting anyway.
You know, I don't have any numbers to back that up myself, but it wouldn't surprise me if Apple is the top buyer right now. And I'm betting that if we're wrong on that, someone, one of our listeners will let us know.
Indeed, I'm sure that one of our listeners will. And, you know, that's probably a good segue for the mea culpa.
Okay. I think that sounds like a great idea.
All right. Well, now it's time then for the mea culpa from yours truly. Last week, I noted that Japan's population was the same as that of the U.S., but crammed into a land area the size of California. All this is true except for, well, half of it. Japan is indeed the size of California, but its population of 120 million is hardly the size of the U.S., which currently stands around 300 million. So my comments were corrected by Eric Maitlag, who spotted my glaring mistake and was kind enough to let us know. Mr. Maitlag also said I was wrong about Japan offering unlimited text messaging. According to him, cell phone contracts are fairly pricey in Japan, and no one is offering unlimited text messaging. I must admit that my information on Japan having a lot of unlimited text messaging plans was based on my wife's experience there some 5 years ago and is accordingly out of date. Confirming with her, she had 2,500 text messages a month, and you can compare that to most U.S. contracts where, you know, you might get 20, 100, or 200, maybe a few hundred. But she did have to pay for incoming calls. I think at one point she must have used the phrase effectively unlimited text messaging, and in my mind I sort of just grasped hold of the parts I wanted to hear about that. I offer my apologies to our listeners for mixing up my factoids and not checking current conditions before spouting off in the context machine.
Now, with that said, that's exactly what we do in the context machine. We spout off. So if you have anything to correct, add, question, or comment on, let us know. You can send us an email. The address is roundup@macobserver.com.
Before we head out, we'll do a quick product roundup.
I'll start off. Quaker Tech released NQuickie, a PCI-based 802.11n wireless card for the PowerMac G3, G4, and G5. It allows these older Macs to take advantage of the faster and more robust N version offered in Apple's latest generation AirPort Extreme base stations. The PCI card is priced at $149.95.
FileMaker announced Tuesday the immediate availability of FileMaker Pro 9. The new version of the database application added a new quick start screen, conditional formatting that highlights data based on user-created parameters, improved SQL support, link emailing so that other users can access your databases, and more.
ThinkMac Software announced the immediate availability of NewsLife 1.0 on Tuesday. NewsLife is a universal binary RSS news aggregator and reader application. The application includes a simple interface, allows users to organize feeds however they want, filters articles, displays article thumbnails, supports article searching, and includes a built-in scrapbook for storing articles. It also allows users to email, dig, and post articles to blogs. And also, Apple released a new firmware update for the MacBook Pro, along with a new firmware restoration CD for Intel-based Macs on Thursday. The MacBook Pro EFI firmware update 1.3 addresses a display issue found on the 2.2 and 2.4 GHz 15-inch MacBook Pro. Apple also released the firmware restoration CD version 1.3 for Intel-based Macs. The CD restores the default computer firmware in the event of a failed or interrupted firmware update.
And finally this week, Freeverse released TunaPitch, a free app or dashboard widget that allows you to tune any instrument whose input you can run through your Mac. It also provides reference tones for those wishing to tune by ear. We mention it here mainly so we can say the name, TunaPitch.
TunaPitch.
TunaPitch. Man, that's fun. You gotta love the Mac market.
And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the Apple Weekly Report.
TunaPitch. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for TMO. That's all I've got.
And stay subscribed.
Until next week, we'll see you online.
Tuna pitch. Yeah, that is fun to say.
It is.